Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, March 5th, 2020. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Moments of Mourning, Ecologist, Ex-Pitcher for Bradley University Among Three Who Died. Kelsey Watznauer, Lincoln. As investigators continue to search for the cause of a fatal plane crash outside Lincoln, authorities on Wednesday released identities of the three men who were killed. The Illinois State Police said those killed were pilot Mitchell W. Jansen, 22, of Princeville, and passengers Matthew Hansen, 33, of Pulaski, Wisconsin, and Kevin Chapman, 30, of Urbana. The four-seat, single-engine Cessna 172 crashed into southbound lanes of Interstate 55 on the west side of Lincoln, near where the freeway crosses State Routes 10-121 at 8:49 a.m. Tuesday. The National Transportation Safety Board is leading the investigation, but has not released information about where the plane was going or the cause of the crash. On Wednesday, the state police said the aircraft had departed from Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington. Jansen's Facebook page identifies him as a pilot for Air Wisconsin and as a flight instructor for Synergy Flight Center in Bloomington. Synergy, at 2823 East Empire Street, offers flight training, aircraft maintenance, and hangar space near Central Illinois Regional Airport. Officials would not comment about the crash. Jansen graduated from Princeville High School in 2015 and from Bradley University in 2019, where he was a starting pitcher on the baseball team. As a senior, he led all NCAA Division I pitchers in earned run average for several weeks, before ending the season 25th with the third-best season earned run average in the metal bat era at Bradley, according to Bradley University Athletics. Bradley University Athletics on Facebook posted, Son, brother, teammate, and friend, the entire Bradley community shares its condolences with Mitch's family, friends, and teammates. Jansen moonlighted as a commercial charter jet pilot during his final 2 years of college, becoming the youngest pilot in the world to fly a specific twin-engine jet. He purchased his own plane in 2018, according to Bradley University Athletics. John Morgan of Bloomington, who has been flying professionally for more than 40 years, met Jansen as part of the aviation community, but did not know him personally. He carried himself very well as a professional, he said of the young pilot. Passenger Chapman was an ecologist with Schoner Environmental, Inc., which has an office in Champaign. He earned his master's degree from Utah State University in 2016, working as a graduate student researcher in the Fish Ecology Lab, and studying ecology and watershed sciences. Hansen, the other passenger, lived in a small village outside Green Bay, Wisconsin. The Central Illinois aviation community on Wednesday was still reeling from the shock of what happened. I think at first there is a sense of respect and numbness where we don't try to talk or speculate about what happened, Morgan said. The region is home to several small flying clubs and private pilots. Morgan said Wednesday that the Brotherhood of Aviation Enthusiasts is numbed and quiet. Authorities continue to examine wreckage and records, with the Federal Aviation Administration and NTSB leading the investigation. When more information is revealed, Morgan said the aviation community will be able to learn. We examine ourselves, what we can do better as an industry, what we can do better as professional pilots, he said. And that's really all we can do is learn and go on. Stephen Barnes, safety officer for the Flying 20 Club in Springfield, hopes the NTSB can shed light on it. It definitely makes us think. When we hear things like that, everyone reaches out to pilots they know, said Barnes, a certified private pilot since 2003. It's a tight-knit community. We definitely look out for each other. The Springfield aviation community recently suffered its own loss when a small private plane crashed near Springfield. In January, former Springfield Mayor Frank Edwards, Sangamon County Coroner Cinda Edwards, and Glenarm resident John Evans were killed when their twin-engine Piper Aerostar went down in an unincorporated area of Sangamon County, after taking off from Sarasota-Bradenton International Airport in Florida. When tragedies like this happen, you always kind of place yourself in the family's shoes, Morgan said. I just can't imagine the parents, the siblings, the loved ones who have lost such a young life. After decades of experience, Morgan has had the opportunity to watch pilots come up in the industry, and many begin as flight instructors, like Jansen. A lot of us start out as flight instructors ourselves, and there's a sense of pride in knowing we had a part in someone else's professional development, he said. Barnes said working hard to earn certification and keep it creates a sense of camaraderie among pilots. It's a small faction of people that do fly, so when you do become a part of that community, there's a kinship there, Barnes said. Paul Schweich and Maria Nagel contributed to this report. Macon Resources, Inc. Spread the word. MRI opens doors to community. Inclusion, acceptance promoted at event. By Danette Beckett, Decatur. To celebrate the value of inclusion, Macon Resources, Inc. opened its doors to the community Wednesday for games, crafts, and even karaoke. The nonprofit organization, which provides services to promote growth and independence for people with disabilities, offered the event as part of its participation in the national Spread the Word campaign that began in 2009. The effort initially was meant to end the use of a derogatory term for people with developmental disabilities, but has since broadened its scope and goals. It was to end the R word, said Rachel Moran, MRI Director of Development. They don't really do that anymore because they felt they have accomplished their goal. Now it's about inclusion because that is still an issue. Moran said the day's activities were meant to promote inclusion among everyone, not just those with special needs, and to help the community learn more about MRI. Greeting visitors as they entered the gymnasium was client Matthew Gregory, who encouraged guests to write their names on a large poster. While he had their attention, he spoke to them about the reason for the day. We are doing Spread the Word and the Word, he said. We are having people not use the R word. A lot of us don't like that word. Gregory revealed that he had recently been called the demeaning name by someone. I was hurt, he said. Sean Williams has experienced being excluded from activities, not only as an MRI client, but because of skin color, said Williams, who is African American. We are all different human beings, he said. We need to watch what we say. After an assembly discussing the importance of inclusion, guests and clients were encouraged to take part in activities such as Minute to Win It games, karaoke, volleyball, bingo, and crafts, all designed to promote the values of the day. They have a message throughout each activity, Moran said. Leah Cameron, art program coordinator, led a group in designing posters that incorporated construction paper handprints that were traced by visitors. This way, everyone gets to leave their mark on the poster, Cameron said. MRI client Michael Dixon helped Cameron glue the colorful handprints to a poster. Art classes are among his favorite activities. It's helping people out, he said of the project. Aaron Terry also colored a picture and helped create a poster. I color them and give them to people, she said. Sharon Pearson works with people at A Step Forward, an agency providing support and training for those with disabilities. She brought clients to the Spread the Word event on Wednesday. They have friends here, she said, and we want to spread the word about adults with disabilities. Ryan Raleigh, Director of Community Day Services at MRI, said the agency provides community and client opportunities. We go out and do Meals on Wheels deliveries. They will clean up the parks and volunteer in gardens, he said. They also go to museums, nature centers. They travel and go to Springfield and Champaign and learn to ride the buses. One of the goals for MRI is to equip clients with life skills, such as doing laundry, cooking, employment training, and controlling their money. We try to provide a wide variety of types of job training, Raleigh said, so they have opportunity. Coronavirus. Death toll in U.S. hits 11. Seattle Area Nursing Home investigated. Associated Press, Seattle. The U.S. death toll from the coronavirus climbed to 11 on Wednesday, with a patient dying in California, the first reported fatality outside Washington state. as federal authorities announced an investigation of the Seattle area nursing home where most of the victims were stricken. Officials in California's Placer County, near Sacramento, said an elderly person who tested positive after returning from a San Francisco to Mexico cruise had died. The victim had underlying health problems, authorities said. Washington also announced another death, bringing its total to 10. Most of those who died were residents of Life Care Center, a nursing home in Kirkland, a suburb east of Seattle. At least 39 cases have been reported in the Seattle area, where researchers say the virus may have been circulating undetected for weeks. After California's first fatality, Governor Gavin Newsom on Wednesday declared a state of emergency due to the threat of the new virus. In the nation's capital, the Democratic-controlled House passed an $8.3 billion measure Wednesday to battle the outbreak. The swift and sweeping bipartisan vote was a relative rarity in a polarized Washington and came just 9 days after the president outlined a $2.5 billion plan that both Trump's GOP allies and Democratic critics said was insufficient. The 415-2 vote came after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi beat a tactical retreat on vaccine price guarantees and followed a debate that lasted only a few minutes. The government's greatest responsibility is to keep Americans safe, said House Appropriations Committee Chairwoman Nita Lowey, Democrat of New York. This emergency supplemental addresses the coronavirus and takes critical steps to protect the American people from this deadly and expanding outbreak. The Senate is likely to pass the measure Thursday and send it to the White House for Trump's signature. The legislation came together in little more than a week, and more than triples Trump's request, sped along by fears of the outbreak's growing threat. Seema Verma, head of the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, said the agency is sending inspectors to Life Care, along with experts from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, to figure out what happened and determine whether the nursing home followed guidelines for preventing infections. Last April, the state fined Life Care $67,000 over infection control deficiencies following two flu outbreaks that affected 17 patients and staff. An unannounced follow-up inspection in June determined that Life Care had corrected the problems, Verma said. Public officials in Washington came under pressure to take more aggressive steps against the outbreak, including closing schools and canceling large events. While the state and Seattle have declared emergencies, giving leaders broad powers to suspend activities, they have not issued any orders to do so. We have encouraged people who are responsible for large gatherings to give consideration whether it really makes sense to carry those on right now, Governor Jay Inslee said. Right now, we are deferring to the judgment of these organizations. Student accused of violent threats. Police. Eisenhower, 18-year-old, evaluated at St. Mary's, jailed. By Annalisa Trofimuk, Decatur. Police say they took the 18-year-old female student accused of making violent threats about Eisenhower High School to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital twice before booking her into Macon County Jail. In a sworn affidavit, police said the woman was first taken to the hospital Tuesday night for what Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland described as a psychiatric evaluation. After that, she was placed in a squad car while handcuffed and became upset, headbutting the divider window and causing a large laceration to her forehead, police said. She was taken back to the hospital and later released and taken to Macon County Jail, where she remained Wednesday afternoon. The Decatur School District had issued a robocall to parents on Tuesday night about the situation, saying they were working to ensure student safety and had addressed a threat made on social media. The school district did not describe the nature of the threat. In the affidavit, police said a school administrator reported receiving a screenshot of the woman's post on the social media platform Snapchat, which said, "Eisenhower High School will die along with every staff member. And I hope you all get expletive bombed over vacation." The post made a reference to another person that she said had wanted to fight. Police said the student acknowledged making the post, but said she did not directly threaten to bomb the school, did not harm anyone, and did not know why her statement was so serious, the affidavit said. It's not clear what led the student to make the post. Denise Swarthout, spokesperson for the district, said officials could not share information related to the incident as it involves student disciplinary actions. The student is facing a preliminary charge of disorderly conduct. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. She's being held at Macon County Jail on $5,000 bail, meaning she must post $500 to be released. Couple arrested on battery charges by Tony Reed, Decatur. Police say a Decatur man and woman were arrested Wednesday after she said he punched her repeatedly, and he said she hit him and dumped food on his bed. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police said the incident happened just before 1 a.m. Wednesday at an address in the 900 block of West Macon Street. The 27-year-old woman, who has children with the man, and described their relationship as on and off, told police she had accused him of being with another woman. She stated she poured ranch on the bedspread in his bedroom, the affidavit said. The affidavit quotes the 36-year-old man as saying that she followed that up with a cup of coleslaw, some of which ended up spread down his shirt after he hit the cup out of her hand. The woman said he began punching her in the face and chest with a closed fist. She advised he put a pillow on her face and started punching the pillow, the affidavit said. The man told police he had only pushed her with the palm of his hand, but the affidavit said he acknowledged he probably pushed her too hard. The man told patrol officers he had wanted her to leave and said he had dragged her off the bed after she kept going back to his bedroom. He said she hit him with the back of her hand under his left eye. The affidavit noted both parties had abrasion wounds under their left eyes. The man was arrested on a preliminary charge of committing domestic battery while having a prior domestic battery offense, and the woman was booked on a charge of domestic battery. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. A check of Macon County jail records Wednesday showed they were both free on bail set at $3,000 each. 17-year-old pleads not guilty in manslaughter case by Tony Reed, Decatur. Bryant A.L. Lowe appeared in Macon County Circuit Court Wednesday and pleaded not guilty to accidentally shooting a man to death in a Decatur motel room. Lowe, represented by defense attorney Stephen Willoughby, denied one charge of involuntary manslaughter and one charge of the reckless discharge of a firearm. Sworn police Decatur police statements said 21-year-old Jason A. Goodbread was killed December 5th at the Decatur Inn after being shot in the chest. Lowe is 17 but is being tried in adult court after Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott asked a judge to transfer the case. Judge Phoebe Bowers found probable cause to try Lowe and set a pretrial hearing for April 6th after listening to evidence from Detective Troy Ferris. He said Goodbread's girlfriend had told police Lowe was in possession of a gun, and she saw Lowe pointing the weapon in Goodbread's direction when it went off. Ferris said a photo lineup was conducted, and the woman picked Lowe as the person who discharged the firearm in the direction of Jason Goodbread, causing a gunshot wound to the chest. The fatal shooting isn't the only legal problem Lowe is facing. He has also pleaded not guilty in another case where he's accused of attempted murder and aggravated battery involving the discharge of a firearm. That case dates to December 16th in the 3900 block of North Water Street. In another sworn affidavit, Detective Eric Matthews said Lowe had sought revenge on a man who bought cannabis from him with fake money. Lowe had found the man and opened fire with a rifle from the passenger seat of a car, wounding the victim in the abdomen. This case has been dealt with in adult court from the beginning due to the seriousness of the offenses. A pretrial hearing is also scheduled for April 6th. He's being held in custody at the Peoria County Juvenile Center, which does not release mugshots to the media. Milliken tells students to use caution. School encouraging coronavirus vigilance by Allison Petty, Herald and Review, Decatur. Millikan University is taking steps to make sure students are informed and taking precautions against the spread of coronavirus. We are monitoring the situation, and we're sending a message to students before they leave for spring break, with links to further information on COVID-19, said Dane Lisser, Director of Media Relations and Publications. Millikan's spring break is March 7th to 15th. The university has not enacted any travel restrictions for students, he said. An increasing number of U.S. colleges and universities are canceling or suspending overseas programs in the wake of the coronavirus epidemic, which originated in Wuhan, China, and has sickened tens of thousands globally. 4 people in Illinois have tested positive for the virus, state officials said this week. All were in Cook County. Lisser said Millikan is encouraging all students and employees to take the following precautions against all viruses. Washing hands with soap and water. Staying home when feeling sick, especially until a fever is absent for 24 hours. Covering mouth when coughing or sneezing by using a tissue or an elbow. Avoiding close contact with people who are sick. Getting a flu shot to help prevent the spread of seasonal flu. And increased cleaning of frequently touched surfaces. Prescription drug price cap bill stalls in committee. Lead sponsor says he'll continue working to control costs. By Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. A bill that would allow the state to cap the prices of certain high-cost prescription drugs stalled in a House committee Wednesday amid stiff opposition from the pharmaceutical and insurance industries. It was the second straight year House Bill 3493 failed to pass out of the Prescription Drug Affordability and Accessibility Committee. Representative Will Guzzardi, Democrat of Chicago, who chairs the committee and is the bill's chief sponsor, called it frustrating. I think that the situation for patients who need their prescriptions in this state is dire and getting worse every day, and I would hope that my colleagues on both sides of the aisle could see that it's time for us to do something, Guzzardi said in an interview after the vote. Unfortunately, they seem to be more responsive to the pharmaceutical industry than to their constituents. The bill would set up a 5-member board that would have authority to conduct cost reviews and set upper payment limits for any prescription drug that crosses certain price thresholds. Those include brand-name drugs that cost $30,000 or more for a year's supply or a course of treatment, or whose wholesale price increases by more than $3,000 in a 12-month period. Other thresholds would apply to biosimilar drugs, those that are highly similar to name brand drugs made from microorganisms found in plants or animals, as well as generic drugs. The upper payment limits would apply only to insurance policies regulated by the state. Those are primarily small group employer-based plans, individual family plans that people purchase through the Affordable Care Act exchange markets, and plans administered directly by the state, such as state employees' health insurance and the state Medicaid program. The limits would not apply to large self-insured plans that are governed by the Federal Employment Retirement Income Security Act, known as ERISA, or to Medicare Part D plans, which are regulated under federal law. Wednesday's hearing took place in a packed committee room, where supporters of the bill, many affiliated with AARP, wore red T-shirts that read, "Stop Prescription Greed" and "Drugs Don't Work If People Can't Afford Them." Donna Cruz, an AARP volunteer, spoke of a time in her life when she became unable to work full-time because she could not afford her medications and was forced to move back in with her parents. "I became a boomerang child after years of being self-sufficient," she said. "The blow to my ego was enormous. Without my parents' help, however, I do not know how I could have survived. How can the greatest country in the world allow its citizens to suffer because of the high cost of prescription drugs?" she asked later in her testimony. But Kip Snyder, Vice President for State Policy at the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, or PhRMA, argued that while there are individual examples of drug prices spiraling out of control, prices overall and the total amount spent on drugs nationwide have risen only modestly in recent years. "Now, I'm not here to say we don't have a problem," he said. We do have problems, and we need to look at ways to address those. But I would submit that more so than a system-wide problem, what we have is individual patient affordability problems. Snyder said, much of the problem stems from changes in the design of insurance policies that have led to patients paying higher deductibles and copays for their medications, and in some cases, having to pay an entire year's deductible before their benefits kick in. Laura Minzer, president of the Illinois Life and Health Insurance Council, agreed that insurance plan designs are a big factor in how much people pay for prescriptions. But she also argued the small group and individual plans that would be covered by the bill make up only 20% of the private insurance market. Survey: Coronavirus Impacting Parts of Economy by Martin Krutzinger, Associated Press, Washington. The Federal Reserve's latest nationwide survey of business conditions has found that the coronavirus outbreak has begun to impact tourism and disrupt manufacturing chains in parts of the United States. The survey compiled by the Fed's 12 regional banks and released Wednesday found that growth through late February continued at a moderate rate, but it noted that concerns are rising about how the virus that began in China might impact the U.S. economy. Tourism from China is being affected, and American manufacturers are beginning to report supply chain delays, the report said. The Fed's San Francisco Regional Bank reported that the COVID-19 outbreak has led to decreased demand for aircraft from China and other Southeast Asian nations. Some American solar equipment manufacturers have also experienced delayed shipments due to supply chain disruptions. The survey, known as the Beige Book, will be part of the discussion when Fed officials meet later this month to review interest rates. The Fed on Tuesday announced a surprise half-point cut in its benchmark rate in an effort to support the economy in the face of the spreading virus. The move, which pushed the Fed's policy rate down to a range of 1% to 1.25%, marked the largest cut since the 2008 financial crisis. Some analysts believe the Fed will cut rates even further at its March 17-18 meeting, especially if the effects of the coronavirus have grown more serious by that time. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, March 5th, 2020. Please stay tuned.